Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, Roy Matlock Jr., today we are going to talk about how money works. And if you're just tuning in, I would encourage you to visit RoyMatlockJr.com and listen to some of the previous podcasts. I think we're upwards of 200 different segments on the website. So anything you need to know about money is pretty much sitting there. And what we try to do, I've been doing this for a long, long time. It blows my mind that I'm going on my 41st year in the financial business, and learned a lot, seen a lot. And we're going to talk today about how money works and what the wealthy do that most people don't do. And so that's going to be kind of the segment today. And I'm going to get into a lot of things that, really, I think, change that I've noticed over time. We are a fiduciary. We work with people and their money. Over 40,000 customers, or we'll call them clients, that have come to us to help with their money. And over that period of time, I remember walking into people's houses back in the early days when I did most of my appointments in their home, and I could walk in, and it was kind of like going to the carnival and they want to guess your age or your weight. I could guess if they were broke or they had any money just when I walk in the door by what they spent their money on. And so what if I pulled in and it was a new car and it was in a neighborhood that, is not a real high income neighborhood and they had a new car, it generally meant they didn't have any money and they had debts. And so I just start making observations over time, and I could pretty well tell you someone's financial position the moment within just a few minutes of when I met them. And so what did I learn? Okay, well, I've got like 9 points here we'll talk about to begin with. The first one is something called pay yourself first. And so as soon as you make the decision that you're going to make a profit on your efforts, meaning that if you get up every morning, I went to Starbucks this morning, and when I did the, got my normal coffee, and you see homeless people out there, and you feel sorry for the homeless people, but I even feel more sorry for the people that work Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, and they get out, after years and years and years of effort, and then they're sitting there and they're living paycheck to paycheck, and they don't have any money. And the reason they don't have any money is they have not decided to make a profit on their efforts. So you treat savings like a bill. Number one, pay yourself first. Automate it. Automation is the key, because then that way you get used to it. Wealth is built by consistency, not occasional effort. If you just put 10% of your income away, you will see dramatic results. Let me give you some examples of things like that. So what we do, we first start out and we say we're going to put money aside and we're going to take advantage of tax savings plans like maximized retirement plan contributions. That's number two. So number one is we pay ourselves first. We maximize the contributions. We let the government provide us a loan. And let me explain how that works. So if I put in money into a deductible account and I put in $10,000 and I'm in the 25% tax bracket, what that means is I save $2,500 for that $10,000 that I put into, say, a 401k. So now that $2,500 gets to sit there for 30, maybe 40 years, however long it is before you're required at age 73 to take your money out. And you get the use of that money and all of the gains that it can compound to. And if you understand compounding, if you get 10%, it doubles every 7 years. So if you have 30 years, you have 4 compounding periods. Then once you get out to 73, you then have to start paying taxes on all of the money. But it was money that you would not have had you not done it on the front end and got your tax deduction. And so what we do is we go in and we buy one and get one free. So maybe we go in and buy, put our money in a 401k and it's deductible, and we take the cash that we saved as a result of it, the $2,500 in tax savings, we stick it in a Roth IRA and it grows tax-free. So we bought one and got one free. So we're going to maximize our contributions. Business owners have even more options. On the tail end of the segment, I'm going to talk about small business because I watch business owners. You know, people ask me all the time about money and finance and personal finance, but one of the things that I've been doing my entire life is I'm self-employed. And as a business owner, I probably have more knowledge on how to run a business than most people out there. And one of the things that I've always done is taken advantage of, in my case, a SEP. You can do, that's a self-employed plan for, independent contractor type people. And then you have 401ks for if you have businesses or if you work at different places like that. But the bottom line is it reduces current taxes and builds future income. So that's number two. Let's look at number three. We use dollar cost averaging. So therefore, we don't worry about the markets. You know, I'm going to have some information a little bit later in the show about, you know, the five things you need to do when it comes to professional money management and how you do things. But if you dollar cost average, that means you're going to invest on a regular basis, consistent basis, regardless of market conditions. And in the accumulation phase, you're hoping the market goes down. You know, the best thing that can ever happen to you is the market goes down and you're buying at a discount. It always recovers. And then what happens is over time, you're buying lower cost shares. So what we do is we start out, if we're buying into an investment, we put it on a monthly basis. I have people tell me every year, they're like, yeah, I want to do my IRA. So, well, let's just look at the number of months that we're into the year. Let's put that in now, and then let's draft it out of your checking account the rest of the time. And now it's automatically set up for the next 20, 30 years to fund your IRA. How simple is that? And so what happens is if you do it when you have the money left over, you don't tend to do it. There's always a way to put money aside, okay, for other things than savings. So number one, what do? We start out and pay ourselves first. Number two, we take advantage of our retirement plans. Those retirement plans, in many cases, you're getting matching funds. At the very minimum, you're getting some type of tax benefit, be it a deduction or it goes tax-free as a result of a Roth. Number three, we use dollar cost averaging to automate savings. And when we come back, I'm going to give you some examples of automation. If you're out there right now wanting help with your money, visit RoyMatlockJr.com and get a free consultation. We'll do a phone call with you to start, help you get you on the right track, get your money working for you. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, we're back, and Roy Matlock Jr., and we are talking, 10 of the things that the wealthy do that I've noticed over my lifetime that the people that don't have any money don't do. And if you're just tuning in, the first one is they pay themselves first. They make sure that their effort ends up with a profit at the end, and that's your amount of money that you're able to invest. We then go out and we take advantage of retirement plans. Those are tax benefits. Why pay the government? You know, I would never consider paying three times as much for my electric bill or for my, water bill or anything like that, or whatever else that I pay. If I walk into a restaurant and say, hey, what's the bill here? Oh, it's $100. I think I'd rather pay $300. But we automatically, people do that all the time by not taking advantage of tax benefits. One of the things that I find that people who have money do, they always look at what is the after-tax cost of doing stuff, all right? What is the best way for me to access money, all right, and to be able to do the best? And when we meet with people when they retire, we look at all the different accounts, and we say, which is the best place to pull from, and so on. So let me give you an example of what dollar cost averaging does, also getting a better rate of return on your money, and that's mostly through working with professional money managers, and that's what we've always done. I was blown away in the when I was first in 1986, the end of 85, I bought my first mutual fund, and I learned this, saying become an owner, not a loner, and I'd never heard anything like that, become an owner, not a loner, and I started thinking about, that and the way I look at things. So I bought my first mutual fund. What is a mutual fund or a professional money managed fund? What it is we mutually fund it. Now, if you've got $50, you can hire a team of professional money managers to look at it, all right? But if you pool yours, mutually fund it with thousands and millions of people and put it into a big fund, then you get the benefit of having the same amount of professional money management as you would someone that had $100 million, all right, because you put your money into something that's in a mutual fund. And then I started learning become an owner, not a loner. So here's an example. We go to the bank. We walk into a bank, and we loan them money. Now, we never thought of it that way. It's called a savings account, but reality is we take it out of our pocket, stick it into the bank, and they pay us a small interest rate. They, in turn, will loan it back out on a credit card at 18, 19%, on a card 10 or 12, 13%, and they pay you 2% or nothing, depending on what you put it in, and they make a spread. So it's real simple. Who makes the most money? You or the bank, the saver or the bank, the loaner or the bank. It's always the bank. The bank makes the most money. And so rather than doing that, why wouldn't you just own the bank? And you say, well, I don't know which bank to buy. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to let a professional money manager go research the best banks, and then we're going to own stock as part of a mutual fund or a managed fund in those best banks, and they're going to probably do better because they're paying you 2 to 3%, and they're getting, in some cases, 21%. So chances are that spread is going to be more profitable than your 3% or 2%. And then the stock goes up, and you're a shareholder, and you're happy. All right. Or you go to Vegas, and Vegas, people go to Vegas planning on losing money. They even determine in advance how much they're going to lose. And then once they do that, they go on and they say, oh, I'm going to lose $1,000. So who makes the most money? The gambler or the casino? I like the casino. I'd rather be the house than the gambler. And so, but I don't know which casino to buy. We let a professional money manager buy the best casinos, and they do it across all types of businesses, which allows you to have big diversification, and you make it happen that way. Now, let's look at what happens. If you take the S&P 500, and, I'm giving you just a broad stroke on what it does, it's about 10% over a long period of time. Now, you have to deal with ups and downs. We'll talk about that in a minute. But at the end of the day, here's the difference in compound interest. So let's say you had $500 a month and you put that away and you did it for 30 years and you got 10% on your money. Here's what's going to happen. All right. At the end of that time, at 10%, you're 30 years later, you got $995,000. So now, what if you got 8%? You'd only have $684,000. What if you got 12%? You had 1.4 million, almost 1.5 million. So now we say, well, what if I got 3%? Oh boy, that would be terrible, right? And so we go to the bank, and if we get 3% on our money, and remember we had that 1.5 million if we got 12, well, at 3%, what happens? Well, here's what happens. You get 286,000. Now, you had to put the same effort in, the $500 a month, so you get 286 or you get 1.4 million. I like the 1.4 million. That's called professional money management. So what we do is we go looking for ways to improve. So we dollar cost, we put it with professional money managers, and we get moving in the right direction. And so now, number four, we have a written plan. What is a written plan? Here's what I know about anything you do. If you put it in writing, it automatically improves. Anything you look at, it improves. All right. Most people plan their vacation more than they plan their personal finances, which is the only way you can really end up going on a vacation. And that's where you need to revisit and update on a consistent basis. And when you do that, what will happen is you'll start getting motivated. You'll start saying, man, I'm moving forward. I got a plan. And what we do when we work with our clients is we help you get a plan in place to automate financial independence. And when I say automate financial independence, you know, we get with someone. I typically, when I meet with someone, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to do a review. And that review is going to be more than likely you've already gotten educated a little bit because maybe you went to our website and you downloaded some of our materials or you've gotten some of our emails. It's not unusual for me to see people that, you know, reached out to us 6 months or a year ago and they've been sitting through some of our webinars and all these different things. And we have replays, by the way, of all of our webinars. You can go right on to roymatlockjr.com and we have those. And so my first goal is to educate. And then once we educate, then we do a review. We take a look at where you're at financially and we look, you know, it's real simple. It's like walking in the doctor's office. What's ailing? What's good? What's bad? What's going on? And we put together, we take a look and we put together a plan. Give you some advice, and then once we do that, we build a defense and an offense. The defense is keeping you from making mistakes, going backwards, things like that. And then from there, we go on the offense to grow it. Now, what is one of number five that I know is the biggest mistake that people make? Is they don't know the difference between good debt and bad debt. So let's be clear. Debt is not bad. Having a mortgage is not bad. All right? Here's the difference. If you have good debt, it's easily affordable, and it's tied to something that appreciates. That's simple. So there's nothing wrong with that. You can leverage yourself, and you get an asset, okay, that's growing at, say, a house at 4%, but you're only paying a monthly payment on it. And so you're at controlling a big asset, and you put a little bit down, whatever it may be. So that's good debt. If you're a business owner and you go borrow money and you buy some equipment, you make money as a result of it, and it's easy to pay, that's good debt. What is bad debt? Well, bad debt is the exact opposite. You can't afford it, and it's tied to something that goes down in value. All right? So, for instance, you're financing lunch and dinner because you owe your balance each month on your credit card, or maybe you are buying a car that you can't afford. All right? And then the car's going down in value, and you're paying more for it and all that. That's bad debt. So number five mistake, okay, or number five things the wealthy don't do is they don't go buy bad debt. That's just not the thing you do. Don't go buying bad debt. What we want to do is we want to get, hey, good debt, nothing wrong with good debt. All those 3% mortgages that are out there, don't pay them off, all right? That is not a good idea. There's much better places to go. So I want to encourage you to visit roymatlockjr.com. We have some new webinars that we just finished up that will help you get educated. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit roymatlockjr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
Matlock Jr. here, and we are continuing on really just what the wealthy do that most people don't. And we've gone through five of them. We're getting ready to go to number six. But if you're tuning in, pay yourself first, maximize retirement plan contributions, use dollar cost averaging to automate your savings and automatically be buying regardless of market conditions. Have a written plan, know the difference between good debt and bad debt. And now we're going to diversify across different asset classes. Depending on your age and your time horizons, we're going to be more aggressive or more conservative. More aggressive meaning stocks, middle range, more conservative meaning bonds or annuities, and the most conservative is cash, all right? And different types of risk, what it allows you to do is smooth the ride. You know, one of the things that you always want to be in a position to do is always have cash that will never cost you money. When a market is down, if you know, it starts with an emergency fund. That way, if you lose your job, you're not taking money out of your retirement plan. You take your money out of your retirement plan, you get penalized, you get taxed, and you don't have the retirement plan. So that's why we have an emergency fund. We have an emergency fund for a you know, car deductible if we ever wreck or anything like that. Or if you've saved enough, then you may just say, you know, I'm going to self-insure my car and just have liability coverage, which is required. That's what we do there. We raise our deductibles. But the long and short of it is we have some cash. All right. And I put that in money market accounts. That kind of thing's easily accessible. Then if we are at or near retirement, we're going to talk about annuities. I'm hoping I'm going to have time to get into more detail on that. But annuities serve a purpose. What's the purpose? Lifetime income guarantee. Annuities are good for tax-deferred growth if you have money you don't need. And also, you know, we see long-term care riders and things like that. So main thing with annuities are insurance. The idea when you buy insurance, it's no different than going to the bank. You have FDIC insurance. You pay for it in a lesser return, but stability, that's what annuities are. They're not a one-size-fits-all for someone. Some people it makes sense. Others it doesn't. Bonds are debt securities. They tend to do better than stocks in volatile markets. Typically, I can give you many stats that show that. And then stocks are for growth, and the idea is for it to help you offset inflation. Why is that? Well, if I go to a store and I buy an item and inflation is up, next thing you know, you'll get to the store and the price will be more because inflation, and you own part of that company that is, you know, that item is being purchased because you own stock. And so that's a way of keeping up with inflation. We're going to create a great defense. That's number seven. Number seven on the defensive side is make sure and have the proper insurance. So what is the proper insurance? We buy life insurance. All right. We buy two types of life insurance. Typically, we buy term insurance to protect income with the idea that if something happens prematurely, we have an amount of money set aside to pay for our replacement of income that we would have earned for our family. So let me give you an example. If you're making $100,000 a year and you've got 25 years left before you retire with no raises, you're going to make $2.5 million. So then we say, well, what would happen if something happened today? We'd lose $2.5 million of earnings. So then we take a lump sum and put and buy insurance. So maybe we buy $1.2 million or something like that. And it's a math problem. And then that money invested would pay the $100,000 a year out, 10 to 12 times your income is a good rule of thumb. We also buy permanent life insurance. It has a couple of benefits. One, permanent insurance, or there's different ones from indexed, you know, what they call IULs, indexed universal life or variable life. There's a lot of different ones out there. Why do we buy that? That's when we die. And we buy that with the idea that we have a policy that will pay off, cover final expenses, estate planning. It will also give a lump sum of money to your surviving spouse if you're married because you just lost one of your incomes from Social Security. You could lose pension income and stuff like that. And so we buy that. And so we buy both. That's what we do. We buy disability insurance in the event I can't work. You also, with most of your insurance plans now, life insurance, you can get what's called living benefits. Those living benefits are if you get sick or get terminally sick, where you can get some of the life insurance death benefit up to usually 90% of the benefit in advance of death, okay, to help you along the way there. We buy health insurance. Why do we buy health insurance? Oh, that's the number one cause of bankruptcy. People don't buy it. And so how do you buy health insurance? I buy high deductibles, health sharing plans that allow me to have a health savings account, which is a deductible super IRA one day if you don't use it. So that's for that. We buy home and auto insurance. It's property insurance. We buy casualty insurance in the event that's called PNC, property and casualty. Basically, that is if our house burns down, we get that covered. If we run over somebody in our car, have an accident, we have liability coverage. All right. And then long-term care is the final one that you have that goes along really with final expense. And that's, you know, in the event you have a healthcare scare, just figure this, most bankruptcies are tied to lack of insurance. So that's number seven, create the great defense. And then of course, inside of the defense, we have a couple other things that I talk about. One is, you know, stay out of, you know, we told that on the debt, you know, stay out of bad debt, that kind of things. And, you know, emergency fund, but that's a great defense. Then we create multiple income streams is number eight. Most people that I know that do well, they have multiple income streams. They have investments. They have a business. They may have maybe they have a job and a side business. And they also have some passive investments to where it pays income, maybe a rental property. I grew up, my father had, I think, 40 rental properties at one time. And so he did that. He also owned a business. So he did that kind of thing. And then we put money into investments. And so now you've got all these different income streams, all right, that come in. I've been doing the same thing. Your passive investments might be, you know, your 401k. We're pulling money out of a stock and bond fund and, you know, to live on. And we got annuities and we have taxable income. That way we don't rely on one source of income. That's number eight. So what we're doing now is we're building a financial house that works. Number nine is get your estate docs and beneficiaries in order. This was is a big deal. I run into people on a regular basis that they have nothing in place. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, have a fight, have your kids fighting over money or your spouse having problems, or maybe you don't have a health care or financial power of attorney, that kind of thing. So I recommend for most people, if you have any assets, you're going to have a living trust. And it's got a lot of benefits to it. The biggest benefits is while you're living, guess what? If something happens, you got a healthcare, financial, and a living will that decides, you know, what would happen while you're able to do it. If you don't have anything in place, don't worry. The probate court will do that for you. And they'll take between the probate court and the attorneys getting involved in the lawsuits and everything like that. You won't have to worry about the estate anymore because somebody will try to take it from your heirs. So that's what happens if you don't have that in order. So then lastly, what is the smart, what do the wealthy do? They go get advice and they meet on a regular basis about their money. They place money, you know, it's important, okay? It really does tell you, okay, where you're at and what you can do. And so, for instance, you know, I do annual reviews with my clients. I have clients that have been with me 30 years. And guess what we do? We meet 6 months to or a year. We've been doing it forever. They become my friends, and we look at the goals. And we say, where are you at in life right now? And meet with a fiduciary advisor. That's what we are. A fiduciary are legally required to act in your best interest. Annual check-ins. We're not tied to any one company or any one product. And so as a result of that, we just go meet, stay in touch, revamp, redo, change as you get older, and then what happens is you have an ongoing plan very similar to any other thing that you do. There's people that know more about it than you. You stick to your lane. We stick to ours. Stay with us. RoyMatlockJr.com is where you can find us.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, we're back, and final segment today, show, and we just got through going through the top 10, you know, things that we see that wealthy people do that most others don't. And now we're going to get into the last segment. We'll try to get it in three parts. We're going to talk about how investments work, how annuities work, and just a brief little section on what you should do if you're a business owner. We have a small business division that we work with, you know, business owners, and we see a lot of things that can be done to structure your business in a different way that will help you tax-wise and, you know, succession-wise, things like that. So let's start out. Let's do just kind of an overview of different investment accounts that someone might end up having when they are growing throughout their life. We have retirement funds, of course. We have insurance cash values. That would be, you know, it could be any type of insurance that's not term. The benefit of retirement funds, obviously, are that we get deductions or tax deferral or tax-free growth. That can be IRAs. It can be 401ks, one of the things you always want to do is take advantage of the company match. All right. If you've got a company that you work for and you got matching funds, that's free money. And in most cases, you know, you're going to get some type of match up to 3% or something like that. And so take advantage of that. Then that grows tax deferred, or it grows tax free if it's a Roth. And we've got traditional retirement accounts, and which are deductible. We even have backdoor, what we call backdoor Roths. So if you make too much money and you are fully funding your retirement plan through your work, then you're not eligible for a deductible IRA. So you do a non-deductible IRA, and then we do a backdoor Roth. So that's how you get a Roth IRA and a 401k. Insurance cash phase, the benefit of insurance cash phase is that you can put money aside, it grows tax deferred, and when you pull it out, it comes out tax free. And then once you pass, by keeping it all the way until you pass, all of the money you put in and all of the money that you pull out, you never paid any taxes on it all along that way, and it's part of a death benefit. And so cash pay insurance for a long-term type product, I think, has got a lot of benefits to it for permanent insurance. College funds, we've got 529s, we've got educational savings accounts, we've got UTMAs and UGMAs, depending on your state. Bottom line is you can either get different types of tax-free benefits or tax-deferred benefits by putting money into certain tax-advantaged college funds, all right? And we can help you with that. One of the things I've always encouraged people to do is, if you have kids and grandkids, open them up an account for $250. And we can do that for anyone. $250, not a bank account, but an investment account. And in doing that, I've done a lot of family, what I call family financial workshops, where I have clients of mine that they have kids that are, you know, teenagers or young adults. And we have a get together and we teach everybody how it works. And if you wanted to do something like that, you know, we have advisors that can do it. I do these things. But what happens is you have a big party. It's a money party. All right. And you're going to change your family tree all in one big meeting. All right. And we can do that by Zoom. We can do it by, you know, sometimes I did these things where people invite, it's almost like a family reunion. And we would come over and I would speak and show everybody how to get their stuff together. You know, wouldn't it be great to know that all of your kids, if you ask them how certain things worked about their money, that they knew it? And so we started doing family financial workshops. I did that many years ago. I started out doing it on my mother's birthday. And we would get everybody together. We would have like a real thing, handout, you know, kind of fill in the blanks, and people learn how to do it. And then that way all of my family has an investment account. You know, I got nieces and nephews, and my mother is over 100 years old, and we've got five generations. And so we got all that kind of stuff going, and change your family tree. That's what people want to do. We have opportunity funds. It's money that is better than the bank account. So it's invested with the intention that one day we may need it for an opportunity. I had a client of mine that we put some money in an opportunity fund, and it was just growing. And then he had a chance to buy his partner out. And when he bought his partner out, guess what? It was almost 100% return on the money because the money was there. All right. And so opportunity cost is the cost of not having money at a time an opportunity comes along. You can't take advantage of it. You know, if somebody comes to you and say, hey, I can sell you this $50,000 car for $5,000, but you got to write me a check right now. Well, that was the opportunity cost. You didn't have the $5,000 it cost you that. All right. And so we want to have opportunity funds that we can easily get to, but get them in stuff that can grow. I usually have stock and bond funds, kind of deal like that. We have non-retirement tax deferred funds. What are those? Those are annuities that we can put the money aside. I mean, it's not a retirement plan, but any annuity you can purchase, it will grow tax deferred for as long as you want to defer it. All right. We have funds for income. We use that for annuities, lifetime income guarantees. And then we have funds for healthcare. So there's seven different investment accounts that we put people's money into. And so what we then do is we go diversify, as I spoke earlier. And in doing that, what happens is we have asset allocation strategies. So we asset allocate. over time, we may move from being aggressive to conservative, or maybe we have the lump sum in my 401k. It's a bunch of the large asset, comparatively speaking. We may make it more conservative when we're at or near retirement. But at the same time, when we're buying monthly into it in our 401k contributions, we're probably going to say, hey, let's make it more aggressive. And then that way we have the benefit of dollar cost averaging. We may have some stuff in international funds, which is outside the U.S., and bond funds and managed portfolios and different things like that. And so we do those kind of things with the idea that we're getting ourselves diversified. And then at any given moment, if we need to access money, generally speaking, they are not performing the same. So therefore, we have a place to go in order to get any income that we need or cash out that we need right there. So these are the ways that we work with people when it comes to their money. Now, let's say that you are self-employed. Let's get into that. If you're a business owner, you know, there's a lot of things that we see with business owners that are, you know, hurtful, all right? And when I say hurtful, you know, it bothers me to see, you know, businesses, especially partnerships and different things like that, where they're not set up correctly. So let me give you some examples of things that we've seen. A company where been around for 35 years. I meet with them and I find out that, you know, one of them is the two brothers. They own it 50-50. They've had it for years, built it up, done a great job. One of the brothers has two of his sons that are in the business, actively working in the business. And in his mind, he would like to be in a position one day that his two kids could take over the business. The other brother has a son that has no interest in it. Matter of fact, has problems and things like that. And so if anything were to happen to the brother that had a son that had no interest and had problems, well, what happens to the 50% of the business? Now we're in business with who? Someone that's uninterested, or maybe it's you own properties together. I've seen this happen, and then you have, you know, you've been working the properties, and you've got been doing all. It all works fine, and then you're in business with a spouse as a result of a death or something like that. And so we see buy-sell agreements that we put in place. What is a buy-sell agreement? A buy-sell agreement says this. Generally speaking, what it'll happen is that there'll be a business valuation in the event one of the partners were to pass. And if that happens, we would get two evaluations. As part of the business buy-sell agreement, we would say the beneficiary of the one that has passed would get their appraisal. The one that is still here on earth would be getting an appraisal, and you would average it. Now you got a valuation. Then you might fund it with a life insurance policy where you buy $1 million a piece on each other. And then what happens is you get the valuation, the $1 million death benefit goes to buy out the partner that had passed, the family. And then any money that's over and above that would be already put in place that it would be financed by the beneficiary. And you and the owner of the business would pay it and everything would work out fine. So that's an example of things like that. We see healthcare out of control, all right, for businesses. It's always the biggest, you know, expense pretty much that a business has. There's different retirement plans. And when we meet, we see different ones from SEPs makes sense for if you're an independent contractor with not a lot of employees. We have solo 401ks where you can put aside a bunch of money. We have safe harbor 401ks. But you also carry with it, I see this many times when we do evaluations for businesses, we find things like they've been signing off on the 5500 and they don't know what they're signing. All right. And then they take on excess liability as a business owner. So if you're a business owner, you want to have business continuity. All right. If you have key employees, you want to have key employee insurance. You want to have a succession plan. You want to get your health care in order. You want to max out your retirement plans. And here's the difference. If you work for someone, in most cases, they provide that for you. That's what businesses do. But I see many business owners that they don't have any of this stuff set up. They sure don't have their plans in place to ensure all of these kind of things. And what is the cost of doing nothing? If you're a business owner, overpaying taxes, risk exposure, lost opportunities. I see a lot of this stuff. They're great at what they do, but they just don't have a business plan in place. And so let's close this out. This segment, we have been talking about, you know, getting, you know, your house in order. And getting your house in order, that's what we do. We'll help you get your house in order. We have some really good downloads that you can go visit roymatlockjr.com. We have retirement plan downloads to where you can read, study. I would encourage you to listen to the podcast, get educated on your money, and that will help you move in the right direction. And if we can help you, you can call us and we'll schedule a phone call with you, 615-843-2999, or visit roymatlockjr.com, and we'd be happy to help you with your personal finances. Thank you.